not moving as it should, but it's nothing in comparison what people are experiencing.
The South African public is still asleep, and they must start waking up to see what Israel is doing. For what they do there, they can also come and do anywhere else in the world.
I'm a proud Jew. I'm not a Zionist, and I never have been. And I think that what the Netanyahu government is doing is actually a moral genocide. Whether they call it a legal, I don't know whether it fits legally, but it's morally a genocide. And I'm appalled. I'm heartbroken. As somebody who's lived through apartheid, we have seen this before. We should know better.
The Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage coincided with the somber Christian period of Lent, and sacrifice and resilience were recurring themes pilgrims pointed to as they attempted to symbolically walk in the footsteps of Gazans.
The Gaza ceasefire march is another example of the human resolve for justice, and as Palestinians endure the latest Israeli aggression for almost 6 months now, the people of the world will only intensify their commitment for Palestinian liberation. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
Afghanistan's reliance on Pakistan for access to international markets has been a long-standing challenge. However, recent disputes have pushed the Taliban authorities to seek alternatives. Invest around $35 million in Iran's Chabahar port, located in the country's southeast. The move aims to reduce Afghanistan's economic dependence on Pakistan, which has been marred by political friction and trade disruptions.
Chabahar is one of the most important economic and trade routes for Afghanistan. The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan tries to have a strong bilateral economic and trade relations with Iran as part of its economic policy. This port allows Afghanistan to broaden its trade with Iran, West Asia, and Europe. That's why we are specially focused on Chabahar and seek to invest there.
Analysts believe this could be a turning point for Afghanistan's international trade relations. They say that Iran has been an ideal trade partner for Afghanistan, and accessing Chabahar port will further facilitate Afghanistan's regional cooperation.
The benefits of Chabahar port for Afghanistan include its short distance with the country's borders. It allows goods to enter our country at a low price. It is especially suitable with the overall economic situation of Afghans. Another benefit is that it opens a big route for our exports, which is in dire need of expansion. When we become able to expand our exports, our economy will grow rapidly.
As the Taliban government seeks to diversify its trade routes and reduce its reliance on Pakistan, the decision to invest in Iran's Chabahar port marks a significant shift in Afghanistan's economic strategy. Experts say the outcome of this move will not only impact Afghanistan's relations with Pakistan, but also shape the geopolitical dynamics in the region. Iran and Afghanistan have the potential and opportunity to cooperate in many fields. Trade and industry in particular can bring the two neighbors closer in a very volatile region. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The recent European Council President Charles Michel's warning that the European Union needs to ramp up its military production and shift to a war economy mode in response to an alleged threat posed by Russia has sparked international alarm and mixed reactions in Europe. Earlier this week, Michel wrote in an opinion editorial run by a media specialized in EU affairs that if Europe wants peace, it must prepare for war, arguing that although the EU's military manufacturing capacity has increased by 50% since the start of the Ukraine-Russia war in 2022, far more was needed.
Our European awakening is just beginning to take shape, and I would like to tell you what I feel. The time has come to create a real union of defense coupled with a true defense single market.
Michel added that the European Union must finally take responsibility for its own security.
For decades, the European Union has relied heavily on the United States and the Western military alliance, NATO, for its security. Analysts believe that the dependency on external powers by the 27-member bloc has resulted in a complete loss of its own geopolitical and strategic autonomy.
In questo momento,
at this point in time, the EU cannot be militarily independent. It can't adopt autonomous strategies. Today, Europe must create its own defense system so that in 30 years' time, it can really be geopolitically autonomous. If we continue to put national interests ahead, all individual states, including Italy, would lose geopolitical relevance.
Michel's remarks come as Ukrainian and international politicians and experts are warning that ammunition shortages are resulting in the losses of territory to Russia.
Michel is trying to keep Germany under pressure, demanding together with the French government that Berlin provide Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles Taurus. German Chancellor Scholz has so far said no to this request to avoid a war escalation, adding that his country has already provided Kiev with arms for 7 billion euros, while France is struggling to pay for Ukraine military aid.
On Wednesday, the Italian former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte accused the current Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of dragging Italy into World War III after having turned the country into an irrelevant, subjugated power. Max Civili, Rome.
Nowruz, the beginning of the Persian New Year, has always given energy and hope to people celebrating the event to observe Iranian traditions and enter the new year with a totally fresh spirit. The arrival of Nowruz for Iranians is tantamount to shopping spree and finishing their undone work. Millions of Iranians embrace the turn of the Persian year and celebrate the spring festival with many ceremonial customs waiting to be observed.
Well, everybody is busy shopping. It is time of Nowruz and the new year. I have bought sabze, sweets and fruits. We're waiting for the new year to arrive.
Sofre Hafsin is unique, symbolic for the Nowruz festivity and its tradition. The Hafsin spread includes 7 items, all starting with the letter seen in the Persian alphabet. Iranians say there's a history behind each element, including sirke, vinegar, symbolizes patience and immortality. Sumac represents love and compassion. Sib, apple, is a symbol of health and fertility. Senjit, silverberry, is seen as a simulator of love and affection. Sabze, sprouts, symbolizes rebirth. Seed or garlic is a symbol of protection in the face of affliction. And samanu represents affluence.
This year it's different, as it has coincided with Ramadan. So we visit our family members and parents after iftar. And yes, it is great.
Nowruz is a unique opportunity for families and relatives to get together and visit each other. That is why Nowruz is regarded as a cultural bridge which unites people. This year, as Nowruz holidays coincide with the holy month of Ramadan, family members will most likely meet up after sunset or time of iftar when those who are fasting break their fast. Nowruz has begun and the Iranians are celebrating it as an ancient festivity to mark the first day of spring and the renewal of life and nature. This year, Nowruz has a different flavor to it as the Iranians are celebrating it with the holy month of Ramadan together, making it an exception. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Earlier this month, the Maidenhead constituency in southeast England woke up to the resignation of its Conservative MP of 27 years, former Prime Minister Theresa May. Hers was one of up to 100 other well-established as well as younger MPs across the political parties announcing they wouldn't be running in the yet-to-be-announced next general election. Scottish Nationalist Party member Martin Day explains why so many are choosing to go.
For some, it's just age. They've reached retirement age and they're going. For others, they've got family commitments and they want to do that or other things with their lives. But for some, it's the toxic nature of politics. It's the toxic nature on social media where they're being trolled. And for some, they're actually being physically stopped and threatened with violence.
One MP, Caroline Lucas, the Parliament's only Green MP of 14 years, has cited the dysfunctionality of Parliament as her reason.
This Parliament has always been dysfunctional. I think perhaps one of the benefits of social media and modern television is that we see it more. It's not fit for this 21st century. I don't think it was fit for the 20th century. It's a Victorian construct, and it worked in their day. It doesn't work in our day. We should have electronic voting, we should have proportional representation systems, and we shouldn't have an unelected second chamber.
But while resignations are not uncommon ahead of a general election, it is different this time round, at least as far as the ruling Tories are concerned.
Well, you've heard the phrase, rats deserting a sinking ship. Clearly, the Tory ship is sinking, and that's why so many of them are jumping overboard and seeking refuge elsewhere.
Britons will vote in local elections in May. The Tories are 26 points behind the opposition Labour Party in opinion polls. Pressure is growing on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to call an early national vote.
As it stands, there won't be a general election in May, but one in the second half of the year seems more likely. Nevertheless, catastrophic results in the upcoming local elections could mean that Rishi Sunak and his Conservative Party's days in power are numbered. Saipur is up, London.
South Korea this week hosts the third U.S. initiative of the Summit for Democracy. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken suggested America could lead the world toward democratic ideals lacking elsewhere.
Vitalizing democracy will also require us to shape a technological future that's inclusive, that's rights-respecting, directed at driving progress in people's lives. As authoritarian and repressive regimes deploy technologies to undermine democracy and human rights, we need to ensure that technology sustains and supports democratic values and norms.
Corralled away from the venue, activists were joined by a South Korean lawmaker to question Washington's and Seoul's credibility, particularly in light of U.S. support of Israel's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza.
Since Yoon Suk-yeol came into power, our democracy index has fallen by 19 points, and we're turning into a very backward country in terms of democracy. The United States, the enabler of the massacre, Israel, the perpetrator of the massacre, and South Korea are causing the endless decline of democracy.
Activists say the U.S. and South Korea have the blood of tens of thousands of innocents on their hands. Through the provision of weapons to Israel and failure to pressure Tel Aviv to end its genocide.
It's not the time for the South Korean government or the U.S. government, who are complicit in Israel's genocide, to discuss democracy. Instead, the Korean government should urge the U.S. and Israel to immediately stop the genocide, lift the blockade of the Gaza Strip, and end Israel's colonial military occupation of Palestine.
While a rift has appeared in U.S. support of Israel, concern is mounting that the Israeli military will increase attacks on the already besieged Rafah, where Palestinians await humanitarian aid amid reports of starvation. Like here, around the world can be found supporters of a free Palestine protesting against Israel's genocide in Gaza week after week. And here at this summit titled Democracy for Future Generations, a glaring question clouds proceedings. What will happen to the next generation of Palestinians? Frank Smith, Seoul.
The people of Afghanistan are facing immense hardship and sorrow, with the country finding itself at the bottom of the World Happiness Report rankings. The report, which evaluates nations based on various factors such as freedom, health, and income, has named Afghanistan as the unhappiest, where almost everyone is very unhappy.
Everyone here agrees with the result of the World Happiness Survey. We are unhappiest, and that is because of the ongoing poverty, unemployment, and lack of freedom and opportunities. Furthermore, girls cannot receive education, which further adds to the misery of Afghan families. When women are despaired, families feel unhappy.
I have been unemployed for almost 3 years. Since then, I have not had any income. My young daughters are missing their school, and this situation is so tough. How can we be happy? The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
As we speak, mental clinics across Kabul are receiving more patients than ever. As a psychologist, I witnessed the rise of mental health problems such as anxiety, stress, and depression. They have even led to suicide. If you take hope away from people, it will result in a depressed and dead nation. Hope is everything for human beings. If it is eroded, all progress will be lost.
The Afghan people are resilient, but the absence of basic human necessities and rights can crush even the strongest will. The international community and the ruling Taliban share a responsibility to bring some hope and light to the life of the crisis-stricken nation. Decades of foreign interventions and war have made Afghans the poorest and the saddest people on the planet. This nation has long yearned for peace and happiness, but it remains to be seen when or whether they find their lost dream. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The appointment of a new Palestinian prime minister at the current circumstances could deepen divisions as the Israeli war on Gaza rages. This is what some Palestinian factions revealed after President Mahmoud Abbas appointed Mohammed Mustafa, a long-trusted advisor on economic affairs, as prime minister and tasked him with forming a new government. Both Hamas and resistance movements, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and the Palestinian National Initiative said that without national consensus, it's a reinforcement of a policy of exclusion and the deepening of division. We met Dr. Mustafa Al-Barghouti, Secretary General of the National Initiative. He told us that the most important thing is now a unified leadership.
We're not against the new government. We're against the way the government is being formed. We want a national consensus government, a government which is acceptable and accepted by all Palestinian political groups through a national dialogue between the different groups. And that is natural because, and for us, the main goal first before forming a government is how we structure a unified Palestinian national leadership.
Mohammed Mustafa replaces Mohammed Shtayyeh, who resigned less than 3 weeks ago, citing the need for real change. Experts, however, say there had been mounting pressure on Abbas to reform the Palestinian Authority and initiate the establishment of a political framework capable of governing a future Palestinian state to take charge of all Palestinian territories after the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza ends.
First of all, that there was a pressure on Palestinian Authority to make some changes, and that's why they complied immediately and appointing Mohammed Mustafa as the new prime minister. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, which is most importantly as well, what the Palestinians wanted. The Palestinians don't want another government to be the same. The problem here is with Israel. Are they, and the international community, are they able to really make the change and let this government to work or not?
The new prime minister now would work to form a technocratic government of experts. Abbas has also asked Mustafa to create plans to reunite the administration of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, reform the government, and address internal corruption. A real political change, not a change in words only, is what the people here desire. Moreover, the upcoming government faces numerous challenges, namely rebuilding the Gaza Strip, torpedoing Israeli plans to control the coastal enclave, and managing Palestinians' lives. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives.
How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The annual Ramadan Quranic meeting, April 30th, 2019. There are some individuals among good and outstanding Egyptian Qurra who do not frequently use assimilation and whose recitation is very good. Besides, they exert considerable influence. We can cite Abdul Fattah Sha'shai as an example. As you know, he does not use assimilation, but at the same time, he is one of the best and most influential reciters. I hope that Allah, the Exalted, will bestow His mercy and forgiveness on him and on all Qurra. Therefore, I request that Qurra do not bother with assimilation. The same is true of too much repetition. This is not necessary either. Because our time is over now and Adhan is about to be said, I will only raise this point. I request that the audience observe limits when they want to applaud a reciter and when they want to say Allah, Allah. This is also another act of imitating the Arabs. As soon as a reciter of the Holy Quran begins reciting, some people constantly say Allah as if it were one of the necessary requirements after recitation. But it is not necessary to do so at all.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes you are deeply moved by someone's very beautiful and influential recitation, and you applaud them involuntarily. According to the Arabs' tradition, Quranic applause is done by saying Allah, Allah. Of course, this is not particular to the Holy Quran. When someone sings an ordinary song, they say Allah, Allah. There is nothing wrong with this, but if we constantly say Allah, Allah as soon as a reciter begins reciting the Holy Quran, this is not necessary at all. I request that you yourselves advise in those meetings where you are considered as teachers and experts, participants to avoid saying Allah, Allah to excess. When a reciter recites the Holy Quran in a very beautiful and artistic way, it is all right to applaud him. However, one sees that some people say Allahu Akbar as soon as the reciter says, I seek Allah's protection from Satan, the rejected one, a Quranic phrase that is used when someone wants to begin reading the Holy Quran. I hope that God will associate all of you with the Holy Quran and that He will build your life in this world and in the hereafter by the blessedness of the Holy Quran. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me
event.
Bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling has claimed more lives in the besieged territory. The Palestinians' death toll has now surpassed 32,000, who are mostly women and children. Israel keeps expanding the scope of its crimes against Palestinians by bombing and raiding hospitals, opening fire at displaced people queuing to receive aid, and assassinating civilians with drone strikes. And all these atrocities are committed with impunity due to the unconditional support from Western powers, particularly the United States. We'll discuss that more in tonight's Spotlight program. Our guests joining us are author and political activist Eve Engler, joining us from Montreal. And from Chicago, we have political commentator Shabir Rizvi.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Ms. Strangler in Montreal. Now, attacking hospitals and shelters, it's been a hallmark of the Israeli regime's conduct throughout its genocidal assault. Now, Al-Shifa Hospital, where 30,000 Palestinians are taking shelter, has been under attack and under siege for almost a week now. Some of the details of what's going on there, Israeli forces have cut off water and electricity to the medical facility. Has the impunity of the Israelis, completely in line with the inaction of the international community, reached this point where they can push the boundaries of monstrosity and act in complete contravention of all international conventions and rules of armed conflict?
Unfortunately, it has. I mean, it's war crime after war crime after war crime after war crime. They boast about it. Israeli, you know, soldiers boast about it online. And it looks like the U.S. is going to be vetoing another U.N. resolution. Israel just keeps getting the support, gets new weapons, and there seems to be almost no threshold at which they can surpass that leads to serious consequence. It's almost beyond belief, but this is we just have to keep raising the pressure in the countries like Canada, where I am, that have been enabling this unbelievable horror.
Mr. Rizvi, the U.S. Proposed a resolution at the Security Council earlier today calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a hostage deal. That was not passed as Russia and China vetoed it. Moscow and Beijing, of course, voting down the U.S. resolution. It shouldn't come as a surprise, as an immediate and unconditional ceasefire not linked to the release of the captives was all they would accept. Break down what happened today at the Security Council, and how did you view the U.S. proposal in the first place?
Yes, well, it's clear that the U.S. so-called ceasefire proposal isn't a real proposal for ceasefire. If you read the details, this basically just abides by Israel's demands without making any real concessions to the Palestinian resistance. And first and foremost, this so-called deal would allow for the full invasion of Rafah, where the Israeli army would without a doubt continue the ethnic cleansing, continue the war crimes, and continue the genocide. This is being falsely promoted, in my opinion, as a ceasefire deal in order to make Russia, China, and whoever else disagrees with that may disagree with this ceasefire proposal look like the bad guys at a time where there is more violence and more ethnic cleansing happening before our eyes. Within the actual ceasefire resolution, the quote-unquote ceasefire resolution proposed by the United States, this was basically just blanketed as Israeli demands, and they might say that, you know, they're allowing or they're asking for more humanitarian aid to come into Gaza, but what we're seeing is the delivery of the humanitarian aid is being impeded by Israeli settlers who block off access to the humanitarian aid. Two, the delivery of the humanitarian aid in itself is a weapon, because as Palestinians are being starved out, starving Palestinians run to the deliveries, wherever the aid is being delivered, only to be shot down by Israeli forces or be crushed by the crates that are being airdropped anyway. So in and of itself, the delivery of the so-called humanitarian aid is actually allowing for the further elimination and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And last but not least, baked into that would likely be the expansion of this so-called humanitarian port that's being built on Gaza, which, by the way, the Palestinians never had access to or the ability to build their own ports in the first place due to being besieged by the Israeli occupation. This would allow the United States to then create this port, which would lead to more further occupation of Palestine, perhaps even installing some sort of U.S.-Israel partnership base to besiege Gaza even further. So the whole deal is not really a deal.
Mr. Engler, the U.S., it wants to establish a port to deliver humanitarian assistance in Gaza, but at the same time it provides weapons and lethal arsenal to the Israelis. Break down this questionable and appalling hypocrisy and inconsistency by the U.S. Many critics have described the U.S.'s involvement in efforts for ceasefires nothing but a facade.
Correctly so. There is no problem with getting food and other things into Gaza if Israel just stops blocking it by truck. And a simple way to pressure Israel to stop blocking it by truck would be to say that we are going to, at minimum, stop the weapon shipments until you stop doing that, let alone the $4 billion a year in annual military donations or aid donations to Israel that the U.S. gives, plus this plan to expand that. So this is not rocket science. There is no reason why there can't be hundreds, if not thousands, of trucks that enter Gaza every single day like they have in the past. This is just that Israel wants to collectively punish Palestinians. Israel wants to drive Palestinians out. Israel wants to make it unlivable. And it's the responsibility of those governments that have provided so many forms of diplomatic, financial, military, etc., support to withdraw that to make sure Israel lets in food. But that's not complicated. This is a sort of all a big diplomatic game Americans are playing to act like they're getting tough on Israel. They're against the operation in Rafah because it's bad for public opinion when it comes to the U.S. internationally, and so they're making a big, huge show of visiting Blinken, visiting Israel, and acting like they're trying. I mean, if they really want this to happen, they really want there not to be a full-on onslaught on Rafah, they really want food to get in, they have to exchange that, bring in pressure. It's simple, and we're not talking about boycotting and divestment and sanctions, which many people are calling for. We're talking about just stop these huge financial subsidies that are already being given. Just withdraw this unique form of support that's already being given to this country that, going back 5 months, was a brutal apartheid state and is now engaged in a holocaust in Gaza.
Mr. Rizvi, Israel has backtracked on a photo collage of resistance fighters it claimed to have captured during the raid on Al-Shifa Hospital. Hamas had, of course, earlier dismissed the Israeli regime's allegations that tens of members of the Palestinian resistance movement had been arrested during the ongoing attack and siege of the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. Hamas says that the attack on Al-Shifa is part of the systematic destruction of health facilities by the Israeli regime. Do you see it in that light as well?
Absolutely. What the Israeli regime is doing is they're intentionally attacking hospitals, and when people are in the hospitals, they're going to pull out anyone that is a military-age male, which to them, by definition, is going to be anyone that looks remotely like a teen, all the way to maybe even the elderly, and they're going to accuse them of being Hamas just because they fit that description. This then, they turn around and tell the international community that this justifies their operations within hospitals. Everyone knows that this is false, that they are lying, but they are going to keep peddling this lie in order to continue their war crimes against these hospitals, against the Palestinian people. It's becoming clear, at least to the international community. I mean, I've known about this for years. many people that are familiar with the Palestinian issue have known about this for years, that Israel has always wanted to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip. That's always been a thorn on their side, and they are taking this opportunity to commit an ethnic cleansing before the world and kick out the Palestinian people. And one of their ways of doing this is, as you said, systematically destroying whatever health care is left in the Gaza Strip, which to begin with was already terrible. People couldn't get cancer treatment. People couldn't get treatments for various diseases. They actually had to leave the Gaza Strip to do it. So these health facilities were already not in great shape. They weren't allowed to have various devices, various medicines, and even doctors weren't even able to be trained properly by world health standards. And so what Israel is doing is eliminating what's left, so that so that when Palestinians return back to their to the Gaza Strip, to these various hospitals, they have absolutely nothing to start off with. And so it's clear that what we're seeing here is war crime upon war crime, and they're justifying it by calling anyone that stands in their way Hamas or Hamas affiliates.
Mr. Engler, the Rafah offensive, appears to be imminent. On that issue, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has called it a quote-unquote mistake. Now, that's a severe understatement to call it just a mistake, as it would be a mass slaughter of civilians taking shelter in their last refuge as their homes have been demolished. What has the international community learned over the past 6 months of this genocide unfolding? And with that, how can the international community stop this massacre of Rafah from happening?
Well, I think most of the world's population has had it confirmed that Israel, Zionism, is a absolutely brutal country, political movement that needs to be overturned, needs to be altered, radically altered, whatever you want to call it. So I think for the vast majority of the world's population, they've learned just that there is kind of no horror that Israel won't commit. For when we talk about the international community, when we talk about the powerful Anglosphere or NATO countries, anyone with a minimum of heart, of humanism in those positions of authority and power, they should have learned at this point that the only way that Israel is going to be restrained from its most odious tendencies is to end the forms of support that we are giving to it. I mean, so no matter how many times Blinken repeat some concern about human lives being lost, there's too many, or Biden claims that he's caught in a hot mic saying that there's too many people being killed and this kind of stuff, it's a matter of bringing in something that's going to bring some form of cost to the Israeli government and, quite frankly, to the Israeli public. The Israeli public are genocidal. The Israeli public are drunk on supremacism, and they need to be restrained. They need to understand that the world's hegemon and the powerful countries are no longer going to provide the weapons, to give one example, for the Holocaust they're committing. The international community, Blinken at this point, if he's has any seriousness about wanting to curtail a slaughter on top of the however many slaughters that have been committed, he has to bring in some form of sanction on Israel.
Shabby Riz, a video has been released showing Israeli forces killing, or better said, executing four unarmed Palestinians in Gaza using drones. Now, the unfolding events of the past few days, i.e. The continued blocking of entry of aid, the siege of Al-Shifa Hospital, they clearly expose Israel's intentions of engineering this famine and contributing to this genocide that's taking place. Is this a clear indication that this massacre has not only been a war against Gaza's resistance, but against all of the population of Gaza.
I saw that footage. It was terrible. It made me tear up, just how criminal they are towards the Palestinian people. I think from day one, even and day one being years ago, day one was on October 7th, I think from day one, Israel's sights were set on Gaza and removing all the Palestinians from there. What we're seeing right now is for Israel a closing window, because they feel that, you know, the United States, as Netanyahu said earlier, that they want to continue the operation with or without the United States support. We all know the United States is the main financier and the main political backer of Israel. In fact, without the United States help, Israel wouldn't launch. And what we're seeing is an unhinged Israel that knows that but now clearly being challenged to some degree as Joe Biden and the Democratic Party here face resistance not only in the streets of the United States, where millions and millions of people across the country weekly demonstrate for the Palestinian cause, and the Palestinian cause in the United States is more popular than ever. But now it's actually even reflecting at the polls, where in states like Michigan, which has a significantly large an Arab population and a Muslim population, they're voting uncommitted to a point where it's showing in the polls, it's hurting Biden, where 10%, 20%, 30% of people are voting uncommitted. I live in the state of Illinois, where in Chicago, a significant portion of people that typically vote Democratic are now voting uncommitted. In fact, they wrote down the word Gaza instead of uncommitted. The Palestinian cause is becoming more popular, and with this, Israel is afraid. Israel, the support that it used to enjoy throughout the international, and so right now what it's doing is it's lashing out. And unfortunately, their soldiers also have, unfortunately for them, I should say, their soldiers have no discipline. They feel completely emboldened. If you check their Telegram channels, they're uploading videos of them torturing Palestinians, of them massacring Palestinians. And the world is seeing this. The world is seeing the Israeli experiment for what it has been since it started. These types of massacres have been happening since the 1940s, and they've happened every year since then. The world is finally waking up to the ongoing horror that Palestinians have faced. And the Israeli part is panicking. They see, to some extent, a window closing, whatever is what necessary within that window to meet their goals. Those goals are clearly not being met. The Palestinian resistance is still alive and well. They still have not been able to save any hostages without massacring, without even massacring those hostages. And in fact, they've allegedly killed 70 out of the 100-something hostages with their own bombs and bullets. We're seeing this Israeli regime fall apart in real time. And with this falling apart, they're becoming more and more heinous and committing more war crimes in order to meet their political goals, but to no avail.
Mr. Engler, Iran's foreign minister has realized that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reached the end of the line and is desperately trying to survive. Now, U.S. Surfaced in this regard that the White House was likely searching for to Netanyahu. Is Netanyahu now alive for Israel itself, but for Israel's allies? And do you think that the main reasons that any negotiations are...
Yeah, well, I think Netanyahu's been a liability, specifically the right, far right, for the last... There was a concern that came over the Israeli government. The U.S., at this point, Netanyahu has narrow personal interests in not having himself in jail and stuff like that. So that's all part. I think that the U.S. Would prefer betting in the as prime minister and have a little bit more compliant, a little bit less extreme leaderless genocide. But there's not substantive difference, and. This is the U.S. doesn't need to, they can withdraw. I mean, again, they don't have to send weapons. The shipments of weapons happen. The U.S. soldiers, the U.S. intelligence assisting Israel doesn't have to happen. All these, they don't have to happen. But I think that Netanyahu liability, that's been the case. And yet the U.S. Back this European close destroying the Middle East.
Regional blocs, or even Arab governments stepping up and taking their own hands, Arab countries, to openly express their opposition to blockade Israel, to cut ties with.
The sad fact is that a lot of these traitors, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, waited within months, within weeks of the Yemeni blockade of Enbridge to make sure that Israel still gets its imports one way or another. The same could be one of the main exporters of fruits and vegetables to the Israeli regime, as Hezbollah rains down rockets on the north agricultural sector, only for Turkey to come around and give them the same goods. Of course, they have to pay more for these, but that's the point. A lot of these regimes are now showing their true leaders are showing their true colors, are to some extent of they want to play both sides. But the fact of the matter is, you can't play both sides. If you're essentially playing into the hands of the Americans, do you want to stand with the Palestinians, or do you want to stand with Israel and eventually become those victims yourself? And I want to remind whoever is sympathetic to the UAE or to the Turkey, that Israel has plans to expand. It's not just going to stop on occupied Palestine. There is a current leaders float around called Greater Israel that actually expands into Jordan, that expands into Iraq even. And if they don't retaliate against Israel, if they don't do this cancer, the gun is going to be pointed at them. And the same people that are Israel right now, the United States, will be nowhere to be found, because at the end of the world in its own image, and they will back Israel 100% when it comes to this project. It doesn't matter how pain it is, how they want to control that land, they want to control the land.